Welcome back to the California Conversation. I'm Tess Abraham. Proposition 50, which was the topic of last week's special election, passed with overwhelming support by California voters. What exactly does this mean for our state, and what does it mean for the conservatives who live here? Plus, how do we move forward from such a devastating loss, and is California really still worth fighting for? I am breaking it all down for you today. But before we get started, make sure to like this video, subscribe to this channel if you haven't already, and ring that notification bell so that you stay up to date on all things California politics. And if you want more information or sources cited in compiling today's episode, then you should check out the corresponding article on my website, which is linked below. All right, so as I'm sure that you have seen by now, last week's special election was an overwhelming victory for Governor Gavin Newsom and California Democrats. And it's funny because I actually recorded last week's episode on Tuesday, and I was thinking it might take a couple of days to learn the election results. Not a chance. We knew instantly they had called the election like a minute after the polls closed, and it turned out to be true. The Proposition 50 passed with what ended up being a 63 yes vote to a 36 no vote. So it was just a complete blowout again for Democrats. Now, it's also important to note that voter turnout was at about 42% across California, which is fairly low, but is in line with other special elections, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Support was mostly centralized in places like Southern California. So 74% of voters voted yes in LA County, and an additional 54% of voters who are in Orange County also voted yes. So a lot of support was more down south. Northern California showed a lot of opposition, with certain districts like Lassen County and Modoc County, which are super, super far north, 79% and 78% respectively of those counties voted no. So it was fairly split up among regions, as things usually are in California. Now, I think the most disappointing result from this election isn't necessarily just the win or the proposition passing, but it also comes, again, with that voter turnout. So voter turnout was low just across the board for everyone in California, but specifically voter turnout was low among Republicans. So usually Republicans will show up in greater numbers than Democrats in California elections, especially special elections. But in this case, Republican turnout was actually lower than Democrat turnout, with about 45% of registered Democrats showing up at the polls to vote and only 42% of registered Republicans showing up. The reason that this is disappointing is because Proposition 50 passed by 2.7 million votes, but there were 3 million registered Republicans who did not show up to the polls to vote, and that doesn't even include independents or no party preference. Their voter turnout was also incredibly low, and so with some of them who lean more conservative as well as registered Republicans, if all of them had showed up to the polls, then in theory, we could have defeated Proposition 50, but again, the numbers just weren't there, and more Democrats were motivated to show up and vote to pass Proposition 50. So I know we've talked a lot about Prop 50, and we've talked about how it will create new redistricting, and those districts will likely take away seats from Republicans. But I just want to look clearly at exactly what this proposition will do so that you have tangible numbers and a tangible picture of how your life or how the lives of people across California in different districts or counties will be affected. And so specifically, I want to look at five Republican congressmen members who are facing very steep re-election odds. So the first one is Kevin Kiley, and you may have heard of him because he's actually very outspoken. He's very well loved in his district. He currently serves in the 3rd district, but that is now shifting to be a lot more liberal. And so Ami Bera, who is a current Democrat representative for the 6th district, is now actually going to be part of Kiley's district, and he will be running against Kiley. And so with a lot more of the liberal votes being lumped in, it's looking less and less likely that Kiley would win re-election, which really would be a big loss for California because, again, he's very outspoken, very well-spoken for the conservative movement here. Just to give you a picture of how much this shifts liberal, in the 2024 election, Trump won this district by 4%. After redistricting, they can go back and reforecast likely what the outcome would have been in that district. And polls show that it likely Kamala Harris would have won by 8%. And so that's a 12% shift away from the Republican Party toward the Democrat Party. And that's no small thing. I mean, shifting from Trump winning to now Trump losing by an even wider margin than he won is pretty insane. But it gets even worse. Some of these numbers are just so hard to believe with how they are changing the districts and just the lay of the land. And so that's where Doug LaMalfa comes in. He's in District 1, which is the northeast corner of the state. It is so far up there. I don't know who lives up there. It is so far north. But usually it has been very conservative. And this is evidenced in the fact that in 2024, Donald Trump won this district by 25%. 25%. That's huge. He had a clear majority up there. Now, with redistricting, they're going to lose several conservative counties, and they're actually going to gain Santa Rosa. And Santa Rosa leans a lot more blue. It's a big city. And so it's actually going to change it so that in 2024, it would have been likely that Kamala Harris would have won by 25%. Can you even believe that? It's shifting 50% toward Democrats. So again, no small thing, very important, very tangible to realize that how you draw the maps really matters and is going to start putting conservatives more on the losing side, which is why it's projected that we'll lose those 5 Republican seats. The third one is Ken Calvert. He's from Corona, so more Southern California. More near me, he's going to basically lose his district completely. He was District 41. That is getting completely chopped up. And so it's likely that that's actually going to pit him against another Republican. And so likely we're going to go from having 2 Republican representatives down to 1, and it will represent a 14% shift toward Democrats with the changes in his district. The 4th Republican facing steep odds is David Valadao. He is in the Central Valley in District 22. And this isn't going to be a huge shift. It's only going to shift about 4%, but it will make it more competitive and tougher for conservatives. And he could lose if he's not as popular as the Democrat or the challenger to his race. The last Republican is Daryl Issa. He is in District 48 in San Diego County. San Diego, again, super liberal usually, but his district has been very conservative. That is getting completely chopped up. He's losing conservative area, and he is going to gain the Coachella Valley, which it's Coachella. That's going to be super liberal. So Trump won this district by 15% in 2024. Again, that's pretty big. That's a big spread. That's not even close. But with redistricting, Kamala Harris would have likely won by 18%. So that's another huge shift, 33% toward the Democrat Party. And so when I saw these numbers, I was just blown away. I knew that this measure would be bad for conservatives, but I think just seeing the tangible effects, the real people who are going to lose their ability to win races, or the real numbers of what they're up against, is just shocking. And it's completely unfair. It is very upsetting. And then you have to realize, so with that, if Republicans are going to face steeper re-election odds, now we're also going to see rising Democrats. And so we see a lot more people joining the races and up against these Republicans. And so there are going to be more Democrats in power representing us. And so some of these include Josh Harder. He's in Stockton, which, funny fact, is actually my hometown. But that is going to shift a little bit bluer. And so it just makes it easier for Democrats to gain their hold on the city. Adam Gray's district picks up more Democratic voters from Stockton. And so still kind of same area. And so this is where we may have been seeing conservative gains in some of these areas across California, but those gains will likely be wiped out because they have gained more Democrat or liberal votes. And so what you gained in conservatives, you are now losing to making up for in liberals. Additionally, George Whitesides now represents a bluer version of the northern LA suburbs, which is close to where I live, so that directly impacts my life. Derek Tran, who is down in LA County, is more solidly Democrat. Like, we need more solid Democrats in LA. And David Min, who we love. David Min is the one who is completely against voter ID down in the Costa Mesa area. He barely won in Costa Mesa, barely, because Huntington Beach is so deeply red. So he barely won. I think it was like 1 or 2% that he won by. And now he is shifting, his district is moving away from Huntington Beach and Newport Beach, which are both Republican strongholds. And so he just will, it's likely he'll continue to gain power, continue to win re-election efforts. And it's unlikely that we can now boot him out of that seat. So the bottom line is that Prop 50 redrew all of the districts in favor favor of Democrats, making it a lot harder for conservatives to make gains across the state. And it's setting the stage for some very interesting races next year that we will need to keep our eye on. If I'm being completely honest, the results of Proposition 50 are incredibly discouraging and disappointing. I don't need to sugarcoat it. This is bad. It's hard enough to lose an election, but then with that, seeing what the results will actually do, seeing how much harder it will make fighting for our causes here in California, seeing how much it's going to dwindle away the representation that we have is, again, just discouraging. That's the only word I can really think of to describe it. But there are a few caveats that we need to remind ourselves of with regard to this election, because this was a special election, and that is very different. That's different than a general election, and it's different than a midterm election that we see coming up next year. And so I want to help us by giving a few points of encouragement and things to keep in mind as we look at the outcome of this election. The first reminder for you is that special elections often yield very low voter turnout. When we look at voter turnout for the past, it has fluctuated and it has often been fairly low in line with what we saw for this election. So the last one was actually the effort to recall Governor Gavin Newsom, which arguably got more voter turnout than you would expect. But even that was a 58% voter turnout, which again is not huge. That's barely over half of registered voters in California. And so it's more in line with what we saw with this election. Before that, the most recent special election was in 2009, and that had a voter turnout of only 28%. And so again, we're just seeing that voter turnout in this election at 41, 42% is pretty typical and was to be expected. And so this does not fairly represent what every single voter in California actually thinks on the topic or the issue. And so we can't look at this and say, well, Californians just don't care in the sense that every Californian supported Proposition 50 or every Californian supported exactly what Prop 50 is doing. That's not true. There are a lot of people who didn't know about the election. There's a lot of people who did not show up to vote. And so we can't just make a blanket statement about what Californians believe and how difficult it will be to change their mind on certain topics when it comes to the governor's race next year. The two are not the same. So that's the first reminder for you. And it's fair to then ask, why is voter turnout so low? And there are usually a few reasons for this. And so for one, like I mentioned, special elections are held in off cycle and on short notice. And this was especially the case for Proposition 50. So if you remember, Gavin Newsom authorized and announced this election in late August of this year. He announced it, I believe it was August 27th or 28th. That gave us September. And then ballots were mailed out to voters in the beginning of October. So voters had just a few weeks before they even received their mail-in ballots to even understand that, one, this election was happening, and two, what it actually meant. And then for people who voted in person or voted later, then it was just one more month until November. And so 2 months' notice is very, very fast. It is so hard to rally support. It's really hard, especially as the opposition, to oppose a new measure that is just put on the ballot. And so I would bet there are a lot of Californians who did not know that this was happening, especially if you're not engaged in politics. I love politics. I listen to political news every single day. And so I'm very up to date on what's happening. A lot of people are not like that. A lot of people will just maybe see an ad on TV and then they know what's happening. But if they never come across that, they're not really aware of what's going on. And additionally to that, voters are fatigued. Last year, we had a really big presidential election cycle. It was a lot. We had a ton of propositions in California. I think I remember covering 12 propositions, which is a lot for voters to have to learn about, think about, and then vote on. And so just 1 year later to have another election just for one issue doesn't really motivate voters to get out and vote. People don't want to think about it. They don't want to have to figure out what's going on. And so that's why you start to see low voter turnout. And with that, again, there's also the consideration that if voters don't really feel like the issue is something that affects their life or the outcome doesn't really impact them much, then they aren't likely to actually go out and vote on it or mail in their ballot. And that's the case with redistricting. It is not a flashy issue. It is very technical. It's confusing. It depends on who you talk to, of what someone really believes on it or what it will do. And so there's a lot of people who probably didn't know what it even was about or who didn't understand what the implications would be. And it's unfortunate because Proposition 50 literally affects who represents them in Congress. So it is not a small thing, but it doesn't matter because if you just hear one side of the messaging or you don't hear about it at all, then obviously you're not going to show up to vote on it. And so ultimately, I think the main reason that Prop 50 was such a blowout victory for Democrats really all comes down to messaging. And Democrats had an easy message. If you saw the ads, they were ridiculous. They pulled out so many heavy hitters. I mean, I think Obama was in one of them, to come out and just say, basically, if you hate Trump, then you should vote yes on Proposition 50. That motivates people who really, really hate Donald Trump. And it doesn't so much motivate people who like Trump or maybe more lukewarm to him or just feel like, well, I'm a conservative, so I support whoever is going to be more conservative. It's harder to mobilize those people to actually get out and vote. So ultimately, I just think it was a really hard battle for conservatives to win in our state, especially on such a short timeline. So I know what you're wondering. You're thinking, why is all of this encouraging? You said these are going to be encouraging points. I think this is encouraging to remember because this is not the case for every election. This was a very unique circumstance. Prop 50 was a very unique proposition that came up for voters to vote on. And so this is not going to be necessarily all of the same cases for the 2026 midterms when we are looking at a race for governor and how California is going to be run from the governor's office. Voters are still fed up with a lot of the problems that they see around them in California that are a direct result from our legislature, from our leaders, and from our government. People still think that it is too expensive to live here. People still cannot afford homes. People still think that crime is too high and don't feel safe. People still see tents on the sidewalk for an expanding homeless population. Those things are still true and real, and those things don't have anything to do with Trump, no matter how much leaders try to blame it on him. And so those are still going to be the issues that are at the forefront of voters' minds come 2026. And so this is where opportunity really lies for conservatives. If Republicans like Chad Bianco or like Steve Hilton can really capitalize on the frustrations that Californians are feeling and really explain to them why their policies would create change, then I think that they're able to relate to the voters and they're able to move some of them more toward trying a different option than what has been tried for the past decade without any change actually happening. And so they could absolutely gain ground here, especially in a gubernatorial race where these issues are hitting closer to home. And even on the topic of the redistricting, I think Representative Kevin Kiley put it best when he said, quote, politicians can change the lines on a map, but they cannot tell you how to vote. And so, sure, Democrats might have gained an edge. Maybe if you look at the maps, it looks like they have gained a lot of ground and now they have more of a majority for themselves. But political wins change really fast, especially when people's lives don't get better. And that's what we've seen, especially with recent polling that we've talked about on this show, of a lot of people moving more toward conservatives or having more faith in the Conservative Party, or at least losing faith in the Democrats who have represented them for years. People are changing their minds because they're seeing the real life effects and impacts of the bad policy that's been put in place. That isn't going to change just because of redistricting. And so ultimately, the power still lies with us. We can still change hearts and minds around us to vote differently in the next election for the people who are going to represent us in Congress. If your district just gained 5% more of Democrats, that's just more people that we need to talk to. That's more people that we need to get the word out to. That's more people we need to connect with about issues that affect both of us and find common ground on so that we can change minds. So it hasn't completely taken away our autonomy or our ability to elect leaders who represent us. It just has made the work harder. But I still think that there's a lot of hope in that. And speaking of hope, if you feel like you are just running on empty, then I have great news for you because We Heart Nutrition is a great company that can help you feel better and actually be able to show up to things like engaging in politics or engaging just in the daily responsibilities that you have by promoting your health. We Heart Nutrition is a great company. They are family owned. They are here in America. All of their products are high quality and research backed so that you know that you are getting the best of the best when it comes to supplements. And they have all of the essentials for both men and women. And I've really tried to focus on what works best to support your body. I know that it can be so confusing to look out and try to find a good brand of supplements. You're always wondering, is the quality really there? Is this going to be bioavailable for my body? And We Heart Nutrition assures you that they have done all of that work for you. They have formulated great supplements for you right here in the United States. And the best part is that they actually also have a commitment to giving back and to sharing a lot of the conservative values that you and I have. And so they actually give 10% of every sale directly to pregnancy care centers across the United States. That means that they are working to support life in every way possible. So not just helping you to feel better and giving you the supplements that you need, but also to protect life as soon as it starts, even in the womb, which I just think is fantastic. And so not only can you feel good physically from their supplements, you can also feel good just emotionally or spiritually, knowing that you are supporting a company that shares your values and supports life, even in the littlest members of our society. So they are pro-baby, pro-mom, pro-life, and American-owned, which is just all of the things that I love most when looking at a company. So if you're looking for a supplement company that is committed to quality and integrity, then you should check them out today. And you can actually use my code TessAbraham to get 20% off your order, or you can shop through my link below. So go to weheartnutrition.com/TessAbraham or use code TessAbraham at checkout to get 20% off your order, to support babies and moms across the United States, and to support this show all at the same time. So here's the thing. I'm not going to tell you that winning in a state like California is going to be easy. Being a conservative here is something that is hard, and it often means losing elections. It means losing because we don't have simply the majority to show up to vote. It means losing because people are not motivated because they think that their voice doesn't matter. It means losing because we just get demoralized after seeing some of the things, the laws, the bills, the policies that our state passes, and just feeling overwhelmed like nothing could ever change. It means losing because we have a hard time getting our messaging out, and because messaging from the other side is so strong and so motivating to their own base. But our decision to press on and keep going, our decision to fight for our freedoms and values, our decision to try to reform California, that decision is not rooted in winning or losing. That decision is rooted in what we know is truly right and what we know we have to stand up for. Really, if you think about it, there's no other option for us here, right? As long as I live in California, I will vote as a conservative. I will show up to the polls and I will do my due diligence. I will do my responsibility to make my voice heard. Why? Because I love America, and I think America and the freedoms that she offers to us that were hard fought and won by the people who came before us are worth fighting for. I believe that it is not worth just giving up our vote completely, throwing up our hands and walking away. If America is worth fighting for, then we have to at least show up. And as long as I'm voting, I'm going to vote in line with my values. Why? Because my values are rooted in what I believe is true. They're rooted in a biblical foundation and understanding of what is best for us and for the people around us in society. And I believe that those things are worth standing up for, even if they're in the minority. As long as I live in California, I will continue to show up and engage in politics, even when others say that it is worthless or doing nothing. Why? Because ultimately, I'm not responsible for the outcome of every election. I'm responsible for the part that I played in it. My testimony, my conscience, my decisions, they are not contingent on winning an election. They're not contingent on seeing a more conservative or Christian society. They are contingent on what I choose to do with the circumstances that I am put in. And so my conscience binds me to stand up for what I know is right, to be able to stand before the Lord and say, I did my part. And ultimately, even if my part wasn't the part of the majority, that doesn't matter because I personally have no other option than to only vote with what I know to be true and to be good for myself and for everyone else in my state. And even if in my lifetime, I never see another Republican governor in California, which I do not believe will be the case, but even if it is, it will not be wasted. We shouldn't believe that this time and effort and energy is just wasted. Because even if we don't don't change our entire state on a whole statewide level in every election, we still can change our communities. We can still change our churches. We can still change our families and friends' opinions of us, our neighbors, as well as our own selves, our own beliefs. We continue sharpening them, refining them, and further conforming them to what is actually true and actually good. And so I know that I stand before God. I stand before the Lord, who ultimately judges what I do with the opportunities and responsibilities that I am given. And I am not going to stand here or sit here and say that he can't use my faithfulness in a way that will help to reform my state little by little. Maybe your influence is small. Maybe your circle is small. And maybe it feels overwhelming that there's a whole state of people that you can't reach and that you can't change the minds and hearts of. But you are not called to change the hearts and minds of every single person in California. You are called to be faithful right where you are. And so that means that if you are conservative and you believe that these values are true and that they are right, then you cannot vote any other way and you can't simply opt out. You have to continue showing up, trusting that that faithfulness will be used as part of a much greater plan that you can't see unfolding right now. I bow to a God who is far greater than Gavin Newsom, than the Democrat Party, and than the leadership in California. He sees all of us. He knows us intimately. He loves us, and he uses all of our faithfulness for his glory and for his purposes in our state, in our country, and in our world. I could never give in to the fatalistic ideas that say it just doesn't matter and nothing matters and I shouldn't show up, because God ultimately says in his word that he seats princes and he tears them down. And so really, we can't lose that greater perspective. Yes, it feels demoralizing. Yes, it feels like it's not doing anything. But again, it is changing the communities and districts that you live in, because you are showing up to be that conservative vote. And it is changing yourself to continue on with faithfulness, even when it looks bleak, because you remember that this world isn't all that exists. You remember that this is a small moment in time. It is a much part of a much greater plan of redemption, a greater plan of God writing his story of bringing his people to himself. And so I'm not going to sit here and doubt how the Lord's going to use that. Even if it doesn't look obvious to me, I know that it is obvious to him. And so I have to keep doing the next right thing that I can. All that I do on this podcast each week, in every vote in politics, and just all of my life is to be found faithful. That is a much higher calling than just trying to get some certain outcome of one election in my lifetime. Nothing could sway me away from that calling. As long as I am in America and engaging in politics, because that's what it means to be American where God has placed you, then it means that I'm going to be faithful with that responsibility. So we do our best. We vote for what we know is right. We show up. We try to change hearts and minds around us. And then we continue on, because even when we lose an election like we saw just happen, there are still families to feed. There are groceries to buy. There are houses to be cleaned. There are jobs to be worked. There are churches to serve. There are people to encourage. There is so much more to life. And so we continue on, trusting that living small is the way that we are called to be living. Serve the people around you. Have conversations with them about your values and their values, and try to find common ground and also pull them toward what you know is good. Focus right on the sphere that God has given you and choose faithfulness every single day, even with politics, trusting that it is all working for a much greater purpose than what you are able to see right now. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I hope it was helpful for you as you navigate life in our state and that you even learned something new. I also hope that you are genuinely encouraged to keep going despite the election results when it comes to Proposition 50. If you enjoyed this show, then please spread the word and share it with your friends, family, and fellow Californians. And I'll see you back here next week for another episode of the California Conversation.